Hi.
Welcome to the show. You're listening to Smart Talk. Thank you for joining us. We have a wonderful show today, and if you have a comment or question, please give us a call at 520-790-2040. Thank you. So this morning, we want to talk about teacher shortage, recruitment, and retaining teachers. Nationwide, there's a severe teacher shortage. This is especially true here in Arizona, even with, you know, the walkouts, the promises of elected officials, and the huge support of Arizona voters. We are still at the bottom of the barrel in funding our schools. And we're also we have a major teacher shortage. An estimated 1,300 public school classrooms are missing a permanent certified teacher, which is actually an improvement over last year, so we're moving in the right direction. So some of the things that contribute to the shortage are pay, low teacher pay, classroom sizes, which are huge, technology, and kind of crumbling infrastructure issues. It also probably doesn't help that teachers have been demonized for the past 20 years. And when you are held responsible for all the ills of the world, it's hard to stick in that job. So Arizona currently spends less on students right now in 2019 than we did in 2008. And spending less on students includes teacher pay. So do we want the people who are responsible for the education of the next generation to be struggling to pay the rent, to be always worried about finances? We need to start paying our teachers. And it turns out that 79% of voters in Arizona support increasing teacher pay. There is a serious disconnect with our legislators, either because they don't care about what the voters say and just move on their merry way, but we need to start getting people into office who make education their priority. So education advocates across the state say Arizona needs to spend another $1 billion just to get to the national average. Today's show is going to focus on two of the efforts to keep experienced teachers in the classroom. And so there's a lot of programs that are doing recruiting. But one of the problems we have is nearly half of Arizona teachers leave the profession in the first 5 years. So our guest today is Javier Lopez. He's the director of the University of Arizona College of Education's Teachers in Industry program. This is a business education partnership that places experienced classroom teachers in the science, technology, engineering, or math jobs during the summer. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me.
So you are the perfect person to do this job because you have this deep background in corporate sales. You've been a director of development. You have also taught social studies at a bilingual charter school. So you have the business background and the teaching and the education background.
Yeah, I do. And thank you for making our program sound so wonderful.
Because it is.
Well, yeah, you know, it's been, it really is unique to be have this both combination on education and business piece that I found has been really helpful in my role at the university. I started off traveling Cochise County and Santa Cruz County primarily for the MED Secondary Ed Alternative Certification Program for people who had degrees in anything but teaching. And so I traveled around the state, and I still do now, but I travel around the entire state now.
Uh-huh.
And you know, it's interesting you talk about how legislators are not thinking about, you know, investing in education. And so I had the opportunity to also talk on conservative talk show radios in Cochise County and talk about the importance of investing in education.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the whole point is this is not a Republican or Democratic issue when you invest in teachers and pay them more, because when teachers are happy with their pay, they're going to stay teaching. And we want to attract the best teachers that there is, right? That there are. And I have seen there's been polling where suburban mothers in the state of Arizona, after the Red for Ed movement, who tend to lean Republican or somewhat center-right are really interested and supportive of investing in education. And so I think you're going to see a slight change in legislators' attitudes towards education because people really are interested. I know a couple of people who tend to be center-right and want to support their public K through 12 education. And that's what makes our program really wonderful. So when Bruce Johnson, who's now the dean of the College of Ed, approached me after I was recruiting, and we did a great job recruiting in Cochise County, Santa Cruz County, and Pima County. The whole thing, when I go in to talk to, you know, legislators in these counties, it was like, we've got to invest and pay teachers more. We've just got to. That's just a must, right? And we're taking the first steps in the right direction. But teachers in industry, what made me really excited when he approached me to talk about this is that businesses are participating, right? I've traveled through the state and they've said, hey, you know, our students in K through 12, they're not ready. We need this workforce preparedness, right? That's a wonderful goal. We've got to get them ready for STEM careers. We've got to get them ready for new businesses to stimulate the economy. And businesses have to be part of the solution. You know, if businesses are complaining about, you know, teachers not being, not preparing students properly, then what I say is companies need to step up. And I have to tell you what I've seen are companies stepping up, at least in our program. Raytheon's taking the lead. TEP's taking the lead. Roche Tissue Diagnostics. So we have a plethora of businesses who are really supporting Freeport-McMoRan.
So let's talk about first how you get the businesses to participate and what their participation is, and then let's talk about the teachers who participate.
Sure.
So do you recruit the businesses also?
We do. So, you know, for example, most recently we have two businesses that stepped up. One, SimpleView out of Oro Valley, up and coming tech company in the tourism business. One, Brian George, who's the CEO, really is supportive of education, brought on one of our teachers. They're talking about bringing in two teachers to see what they're doing, right? And so we do recruit businesses, and we need more businesses in Phoenix. We have a lot of teachers who are really interested in the program. And so my goal is to work at trying to attract new businesses in Phoenix. Now, the challenge, though, is that the businesses have to have the capacity, the budget capacity, to be able to pay teachers, because they are paying teachers professional salaries, about $25 to $30 an hour. So that is a nice chunk of change in the summer.
But if we could just go back for a second.
Yeah.
We need to, you said that Tucson has more businesses participating than Phoenix.
Yep.
And I always think of Phoenix as the hubbub of businesses, and you know, they're bigger, they have more corporations. Why do you think Tucson is providing more?
I think in the past we haven't really worked the Phoenix market as much.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my role, that is, I've made that a priority to start spending more time in Phoenix to get more businesses who would be interested in doing that. And then, and from what we've received, the feedback from APS in Phoenix, SRP, Medtronic, the teachers that go into their companies are absolutely professional. Unlike interns who haven't graduated yet, they don't have the collaboration or those kind of skill sets yet, where the teachers are like ready to jump into a job, a project. They have the skill set, the knowledge. And they're really impressed at the end of each summer when these teachers leave about the level of professionalism, can-do attitude from the teachers who participate in the program. And so now it's just finding the companies who are interested in supporting our program so that we have more opportunities for teachers around the state.
Because the businesses, the corporations, they are the ones who are paying the salary during
the
summer.
Yep, they are paying the salaries in the summer. So our teachers, after an eight-week period, can make around, it depends on how much they're working, but as low as $6,000, which is quite a bit of money, all the way up to $10,000 in an 8-week span. And so one of the unique things is the retention in our program, teacher retention, is significantly higher than the state average. And I believe that, I don't believe, but we've received the surveys that we ask our teachers over the past 10 and a half years now. And when you supplement your income between $6,000 and $10,000, that's a lot of money. You removed the salary equation off the table for many of the teachers participating. And so this, I think, reaffirms the importance and need to pay teachers a lot more money. And so I'm saying we need more teachers and businesses to participate in the program so that we have a model, I believe, that works. And we're in the process of working to try to see if the state legislator is would be interested. So
we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be back. We're talking to Javier Lopez of the Teachers in Industry Project at the University of Arizona. If you have any questions, give us a call at 790-2040. Thanks. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk. My name is Robin Hiller, and we are speaking with Javier Lopez, who is the director of the University of Arizona College of Education's Teacher in Industry Program, which is a business education partnership that places experienced classroom teachers in the science, technology, engineering, or math jobs during the summer. So what are the benefits to the teachers and the students when teachers go through this?
Do you have about 4 hours?
Yes, I do. We're just going to be here all day. You're not going to leave until you've filled up those 4 hours.
So I'm going to try to oversimplification is the word, but so the first thing, right, of course, is pay. I mean, that they just love that piece, right? And so I did a couple of focus groups and asked them, what if the pay wasn't there? They said, well, God, some would say I wouldn't participate, right? But a good chunk, I would say about 3/4 of them said the experience in the business was absolutely amazing for them. And that they would love to do it again, even if they didn't get paid. Again, this is a pay piece that I believe is important. So I think I don't want to downplay the pay piece at all, but the experience that they get in the businesses are extremely impressive. And so I've traveled the state to kind of really get an understanding of the type of projects, because one of the things that we ask our businesses is when you ask our teachers to do a project, it can't be low skill, filing a cabinet kind of jobs. They have to be projects that are going to be meaningful first for the teachers and for the businesses. And it's a project that the businesses can implement or are implementing in their companies. And so, for example, Roche Tissue Diagnostics in Oro Valley, they create equipment for cancer patients. Really, really high tech and important work that they're doing. And we had Hillary, who was there for the past 3 years. She was able to see a project from the early stages of development through the next phase after her third year there at Roche Tissue Diagnostics. That was a project that Heidi Barnett at Roche in her team said, hey, this is like something that's really important for us. We just are like, we have so many other projects that we can't get to it. Hillary, can you focus on this project for us?
Right.
And she was able to see that project through the end of the summer. So that was an incredible story. If you go to our website, teachersinindustry.arizona.edu, you'll see we have Hillary, who is highlighted along with two other teachers, Cynthia Lopez, who is at Freeport MacMoran. And then we also have TP, and I'm trying to blank. I'm blanking out right now. It's probably still early in the morning. But anyway, so you get to see what Heidi says about the project and participation of Hillary there at the businesses. They just loved it. So they get the experience piece, right? Then the idea is, okay, what are you learning in this, your summer fellowship? Okay, so a real quick distinction. Internship versus fellowship. Our teachers are not interns. And this is a really common mistake that even our teachers say, and that interns are typically undergraduates. They have not graduate a yacht. They get paid.
They're not in the classroom.
They're not in the classroom. They get little to zero pay. Our teachers, on the other hand, are already professionals in their profession. Some of them have degrees, the master's degree, PhDs, and they do get professional wages in the program. So that's a clear distinction from an intern to a fellow. But, you know, when they're in there, they have just loved the experience when they're in the class, in the businesses. And so the goal here is for them to think, okay, well, what are the skills that I'm learning? And we talk about content, right? We talk about STEM, mm-hmm. you've got to be at the STEM. But a lot of the leaders and a lot of the teachers around this, I just did a tour around the state, meeting our teachers and their supervisors and the company sites, all the way up north to TEP Springerville, who I learned provides 60% of our power here in Tucson. We're talking about miles away.
Where is Springerville?
Springerville is northeast of Sholo, about an hour away from Sholo, all close to the New Mexico border.
And so 60% of our energy in Pima County is from them?
From them. Huge facility, huge plant.
Wow.
And it's pretty impressive. But, you know, and then another business partner, APS Nuclear Power Plant, Palo Verde Plant out in west of Buckeye.
I've been there.
They talk about safety over and over. TEP Springerville, safety, quality control. So there are issues that systems that have nothing to do with the content, but rather other skills that they like, hey, look, safety is a big deal for us. And so teachers go back into the classroom and start doing safety projects.
Right.
And the importance of safety.
So what kind of projects have teachers come back and done? Do you know, are you in contact with them at that afterwards?
Yes, we are. Actually, we survey them to see mm-hmm. what their projects are. Over the past 10 years. And they are those type of projects. Some are safety. Some have been, for example, Cynthia Lopez, who was at the mine in Asarco and Sarita. She brought back water sampling. So, you know, big thing for like whether it's TEP, whether it's Freeport MacMoran up in Morenci, or Freeport Sarita. A lot of the companies are testing soil, which is a really important piece. And for a science teacher, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You take the kids out, test some soil samples, go back in the classroom, see the levels of pollution, the type of minerals in there. And it's a wide process. And so I think science is a fun piece. You can take science outside into your schoolyard.
Right. One of my first jobs was testing soil samples.
Really? What would you do?
We were trying to figure out what kinds of things were. This was in the San Diego Bay and what kind in Mission Bay, and we were trying to figure out what was going in down below. You know, what was being released from all these boats, Navy boats, shipping boats. Although it's not as big a shipping area as Long Beach, but it's still a shipping area. And what was being dumped, and could we find it in the soil? The answer is yes.
Well, you see, that's a wonderful project right there. And so those are the type of projects that our teachers go back and do.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so the students, and it's soil is one of the things that is easy to find here.
It really is an easy project. We've had in the previous role as a recruiter, we went out to, God, I'm thinking about the mountains out there, far east. Jeez, they have a lab out there. And, you know, science is happening outdoors. And so one of the good examples that they had a bunch of ants, and they had this snow cone, put it on top of this ant pile, and then you saw the pile of ants just taking this into the ground. And so science is happening every day around us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think teachers can be really creative. And so that's, you know, brings me to something I think is really important. You know, we have a tagline that says workforce development, right? And that's, I think, an important role. But as I see our program in the next 10 years, it's going to be really beyond just workforce development. It's about creating new industries. I was very fortunate to see Lee Crockett in San Antonio a few years ago. And he talks about the way that we
Who's Lee Crockett?
He is, I don't want to say a motivational speaker, but he travels around the world talking about the way we should be thinking about education. You know, the old assembly line, industrial revolution type of model doesn't work for the future anymore, he says. And he's like, if you think about companies like Uber, he's like, how many taxi cars do they own? Zero, he says. He's like, what kind of vision did you have to think about? And it's like an entire new model, disruptive model. And he talks about Facebook. How much of the content does Facebook put out there for themselves? No, they put barely, almost zero of the content themselves. And so,
how much of the content do they share with others? A lot.
That's another story, Robin. And so the way that we think about teaching our students, it's going to have to be radically different. And so one of the things that I do is challenge our teachers and my team to think about what are the skill sets or what are the things that we need to do to make them think about not only just the STEM careers, but create new, entirely new industries, new products. That's the fun piece, I think, is trying to really find where that is and then thinking about the model, right? The education model that we currently have and really kind of pushing our teachers to think beyond the typical paradigms that we functioned in the past 100 years.
You know, this reminds me of Yang Zhao, who is a educator and a professor currently at the University of Oregon. And he is from China. He's the first person in his family to graduate from elementary school. And he often talks about testing in this country. And he said from the very beginning, when they were first doing the tests in 61 or 62, he said the United States was at the bottom. 16 countries participated. We were 15th. And he said, and now years later, we are still not, you know, champions as far as test taking goes. And then he goes, but look at what happened in the 40 or 50 years since 1961 in the United States. All the inventions, all the Nobel Prizes, all the advancements in all sorts of different medical things, science things. And he said, while the United States doesn't do well on standardized tests, where we really do well is entrepreneurship and creativity and problem solving. And his question is, would you rather have a nation of test takers or people who can actually fix what is coming at us in the next, you know, generation?
I just love that you said that because, you know, I still believe that the United States is a leader in innovation for sure, entrepreneurship for sure, right? And I see a trend where we're going to go away from testing. Testing was in my mind, too high stakes. Is there a place for testing? Sure. But I see where, as you see the college acceptance rates for, college entrance, those exams are becoming, some colleges, some universities, even say Ivy Leagues, are not looking into exams. And then some other universities are actually weighing it with other issues besides just entrance exams, right? I think I see that we're shifting slowly away from it. I think it's a really good idea because we don't want to just simplify or simplify some person's level or ability based on one test.
Right.
Yeah.
One test from one day.
From one day.
Yeah.
Maybe 1 or 2 hours, right?
Yeah. Well, I used to say Germany for a long time, you know, they gave a high stakes test in fifth grade and it would decide whether you went to gymnasium or blue collar worker or below blue collar worker. And I always thought that would not be palatable for the United States, that we would never go for something that put someone in a box that early. But with the kind of testing we've been doing, that is, it's like we're going for a two-tiered system, which I never thought would happen here. And I'm hoping that stops. I like that you said we're getting away from the testing.
I tend to be an optimist. And I'm cautiously optimistic that we're seeing greater value in bigger things. Again, we're innovative. And we, you know, what's really interesting, I think that we beat ourselves up quite a bit. And that's good that we do because we're constantly pushing ourselves to be better, right? Mm-hmm. I love that piece about us. And I'm talking about the United States. And so that's a good thing.
Not just two of us. It is a good thing.
We're constantly evaluating, analyzing, reflecting, revising, And that's a good thing. And so I think that the testing piece is one of those things that we're examining, whether there's value. And you see a lot of think tanks, institutions, really examining the value of putting such high emphasis on just one exam. And so it's, we have to look at the overall person, whether they're going to succeed or not.
Well, I like that you said that you're optimistic and that we're a country of optimists, which I really feel is true. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with Javier Lopez, who is the head of Teachers in Industry. And thank you. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk. I'm your host, Robin Hiller, and we are talking to Javier Lopez, who is the director of the Teachers in Industry program at the College of Ed at the University of Arizona. And this is a business education partnership that places experienced classroom teachers in the science, technology, engineering, and or math jobs during the summer, where they are paid a healthy salary. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, I heard this thing on another radio station a few years ago, and it talked about when people realized they were scientists. And it was unbelievable because they were like in second grade. You know, one of the scientists said, I saw this anthill in front of my house and I was just became obsessed with it and I started digging all around it. Do you find that we're increasing science and STEM in elementary school?
Okay, so that's not my area of expertise. I'll be clear about that. But you know, Bruce Johnson, on the other hand, I knew had a fascination for science very early on. So I've heard the same thing. People really fascinated.
And Bruce is the dean. Bruce Johnson is the dean of the College of Ed.
Yep, College of Ed. And his background has been science his entire life. And so I think that whether it's expanding or not, I don't know in the elementary level. I would hope to say yes, but I couldn't speak to that at all. But
do you recruit teachers from that early age?
I don't. Mm-hmm. So the teachers that I recruit or we recruit tend to be middle school and high school. Mm-hmm. And in that arena, I know that teachers do the best that they can with the limited amount of resources that they have, right? And so because I travel the state, like, for example, rural school districts tend to have a much tighter budget. And so it requires, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, if you're working in an urban or rural school district, teachers have to be extra creative, extra innovative with the limited amount of resources that they have to teach. Some don't even have labs in their classrooms. And so I think the teachers teaching now in the state are absolutely tremendous because they're working with less resources than I would say other states where they have a lot more resources to them. And again, I see this when I travel the state.
So one of the things you talked about is these industries, you know, having these projects and then the teachers are there for 6 to 8 weeks and then they go back to their classrooms and bring this newfound knowledge. But is there some sort of disconnect? Because you said there are a lot of teachers, there's a number of teachers that don't have labs. And so if we want to create industry, if we want to create jobs in Arizona, shouldn't we be instilling a love of science and science practice at the middle school and high school level at least?
Yes.
Okay. So I have another question then. And how can that happen? No, my other question is, do any teachers not come back?
Yeah, sure. What do you mean not come back? Come back to teaching, come back to the program?
To teaching.
Yes. So people who come into our program, right, teachers, mm-hmm. They sign an agreement form with us. And the agreement form is, while you're in the program, you can't apply to a job with one of our partners for at least 3 years after you've completed the program, right? We've also asked our businesses to sign this agreement form where they will not hire our teachers because, first of all, we bring in only the best. Just to be clear, We bring in the best teachers. And when we do bring in the best teachers, they see them work in the summer and they're like, our businesses, our partners are like, whoa, these are some incredible teachers. I want to bring them on board.
Yeah.
And so from that business side, it's really appealing in many cases. But they're in line. The partners that we work with really understand what we're trying to our goals and objectives, and so they fully support us. They're really trying to make sure that they're part of the solution in the state of Arizona when it comes to education. They want to be playing an important role in that piece. And then have teachers left in the past? There, I would say a minority have left. But to those teachers who've left, I think to myself, maybe you shouldn't be. If you're like not wanting to be in the classroom, then you probably shouldn't be working with students is my mindset.
Right.
And so we're better off having somebody wanting to be in the classroom and them going off into industry because obviously they found that this is probably not a good match. However, I would say the majority come back saying, we had a science teacher at the Arizona Science Teacher Conference in Phoenix a couple years ago. And the teacher did a presentation. It was wonderful. And then at the end of the presentation, she's like, I was at Medtronic in Phoenix. It was a wonderful experience. But you know what? That 8-to-5 gig is not my job. I don't. That's not me. Like, I miss my students. I want to go back into the classroom. I miss my kids.
Did you say 8-to-5 is not my gig? I prefer longer hours and grading papers until midnight.
But you see, it just tells you the kind of teachers that we have who are in the classroom, who are committed, they're passionate, and again, they are professionals. And
is there an academic component to this?
Yeah, absolutely. They have to do research. And so it depends. So we have two different routes, right? We have the master's route where they... It's a STEM content focus.
Yes.
So they graduate with a content area that they want to strengthen, whether it's science, whether it's math. And they take four courses in that direction to strengthen their STEM content area. There's a research component to it at the end of the 3 years that they present. We have been having more formal kind of presentations where they present in front of a wide range of stakeholders, or you have the PD part where they're working with master students, but beyond the PD piece, they're working on trying to connect those projects into the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have assignments that are part of that. So they work Monday through Thursday at the site, company site. And then on Fridays, it's kind of cool. We have a really, Bruce Johnson, has really invested.
Dean of the College of Ed.
God, thank you for being here. I would have not been able to remember that.
I have a sign.
Wonderful. So he's invested a lot in technology. And if you go to a couple of weeks, and we have another room where we're going to have some phenomenal technology. Again, we have teachers. This is not a Tucson program. This is a statewide program. We have teachers participating as far north as Page, Arizona, far east, Springerville, Morenci, Yuma, down in Nogales. So we have teachers who cannot come in person. So we have to have really some of the best technology so they can Zoom in. And this year we really stepped it up to make sure that the experience for our teachers who are Zooming in from different parts of the state have the same kind. Again, we're pushing our teachers, our faculty, our team to think about how we are delivering instruction online. That's a new challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Because either there's connection issues that they have, sound, disconnections with the people inside. And so we're really trying to fine tune. I wouldn't say that we've perfected it, but we're aware of that and we're making that program. We have a wonderful IT director at the College of Ed, Mike Griffith.
He is great.
He's amazing. He really is. He's really always listening to ways to improve the experience for those students who are having to Zoom in from different parts of the country sometimes, different parts of the world. And so that experience has to be amazing. And so the College of Ed, Bruce Johnson, the dean of the College of Ed, that pretty good?
Excellent.
So they've made a commitment to invest in technology to really strengthen the experience for the students who are remote.
So There's been a lot of talk, this mainly, I'm familiar with the stuff that's in K-12, the online learning, which has not been great in Arizona or across the United States for K-12. But it sounds like this is the time you would need, that the remote learning is actually necessary in this case. It's not just, you know, I don't want to go to school during the day. But so have you found that doing the remote learning is challenging for the people who are so far away, not sitting in a classroom with their peers? Or is everyone in the class on a computer, not in person?
You know, we've gone back and forth with that. I don't think it's only a challenge for the students. I think it's a challenge for faculty learning this new medium that we have to utilize and think about the way that we deliver instruction for those, the kind of activities, right? So we were very lucky to have Sharon O'Neill, who was an engineer at Raytheon. We had a co-teaching model, master teacher with the sales engineer, and she was designing these really good, awesome activities. But they were great activities if you were present.
Right.
These activities didn't translate as well for people who were. And so we had to kind of really adjust that piece. And she did a great job of adjusting. But yeah, it really has.
That would be a challenge.
It really is. You have to like think about the kind of activities and the technology that we're using, the software that we're using. There are some really cool tools out there that I want to implement in the coming summer so that it's going to be more interactive for the folks who are, or the students who are zooming in from different parts of the state.
Great. We're going to take a quick break. We will be right back with Javier Lopez, and see you then.
To contact us. That's what I want.
Hi, we're back. You're listening to Smart Talk, and we are here talking to Javier Lopez, who is the director of the Teachers and Industry at the College of Education at the University of Arizona.
Did you almost forget that?
I did it backwards.
I would tell you, that music sounds cool. Like, I feel like I'm going into a rock concert. It's like boom, 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 boom.
Yeah,
like,
it's Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, you know what? And it gets me all pumped up. I'm like ready to go.
So one thing that we hear about a lot from people who are, and this is a very small group of people who are not interested in funding our schools properly, but that basically anyone can teach. We don't need to have them certified. Or can you talk a little bit about the professionalism of teachers?
Thank you. Teachers are professionals. So I cannot emphasize how important that is, and we say it over and say it over and over and over again. And let me, I'll tell you, this is from firsthand experience. So we had, and this is where the test is overrated, because I saw it firsthand, right, as a recruiter for the MED program at UA South. We talked about quality, right? We've got to bring in the best. And so when we think about quality, it's very one-dimensional. What's the GPA? What school did this person go to? And so I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
We had a teacher from MIT. He was just a genius, smart guy. This guy was an engineer, and he developed and designed satellites that went out to space. Smart as heck. Then we had another teacher whose GPA wasn't great. He was very passionate, younger gentleman, and so he had to come in through what we call non-degree seeking. We have to give him the chance. They have to prove themselves that they can keep up a 3.0 or higher. And some people on the committee did not want this young individual to come in because his grade point average, and I fought for him to come in. So these two individuals are on the same cohort. And I'm not going to say who this MIT engineer was, but
his initials.
We went to go see him in the observation, and we observed him in his classroom, and that was a disaster. He had great content knowledge, but it requires more than just content knowledge. And then this other individual who came in with a below GPA, he's still teaching to this day. And he's one of the most fabulous teachers that we have in this state. Phenomenal. And so it goes back to the kind of pedagogy, methods, compassion for what you do, passion for what you do, the professionalism. So when I hear about certification, like, oh, we don't need certification. You know, Sandra Day O'Connor couldn't teach in our school, I've heard. Maybe not. Maybe not. It's more than just content. It's significantly more. You are not appreciating the level of professionalism or difficulty to be a teacher if you're thinking it's just about content.
And what it takes to communicate that content. So a good teacher has both. But if you don't have the way, if you don't have the ability to figure out how to get what you know into the minds of children and students, it doesn't do you any good.
Yeah. You know, so I'm going to debunk this content there. Like, well, the content, you know, but what we've seen and what I've seen firsthand and what our partners have said is when you are actually running a business, the content becomes less of it. As you talked about, we're talking about safety. We're talking about systems, processes. It's a lot more to run a business and to be part of a business, part of a team collaboration, the work skills, how you communicate. Those things become even more important than the actual content, right? So I had this one individual I knew. He got his degree in finance, and he went and purchased a finance degree. He acquired a dry cleaning business, and he says, Javier, you know what? I don't ever use my finance degree, rarely. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's a lot of other things I had to learn as a business owner to run a business. And so when we talk about simplifying teaching as a content area and content knowledge, that's an oversimplification because we don't even do that in business in the real world, right?
Right.
The finance piece comes hardly. And so I think a lot of us go into careers where we use very little of ours. I mean, they've helped us think about critically, right? To be critical thinkers. But not necessarily do we use those as we move on into careers. And so I think it's, again, those who have stayed teaching are committed. They love working with students, working with parents. And again, they don't work 8 to 5. They're working many more hours. Many more are volunteering to be coaches. They're running clubs. They're using money out of their own pockets to bring in supplies for their students. Our teachers are committed professionals.
Yeah, I think for a long time there was this myth that, you know, why should we pay teachers more when, you know, they get off every day at 3 and have 3 months off in the summer. I was with my sister-in-law a couple years ago. She's a teacher in Compton, California for deaf children. And she said, I can't figure out why I'm so relaxed this summer. And then about a few days later, she said, you know what it is? I've been teaching for 10 years, and this is the first year I have not spent every day of my summer vacation creating materials for my classroom.
Wow.
And she said, and it's taken me 10 years. And she goes, and it doesn't mean I'm not going to be creating ones. It means I have enough to start the school year with and get to know the students and then see what we need. So this idea of this fantastic vacation often doesn't happen.
No, it's not happening. And for sure, it's not happening in our program, right? Because
yes.
Most of the teachers who come in our program, they might have a week where they have no school, mm-hmm. But then they jump into working with our partners the first week of June all the way through the end of July. And some schools start at the end of July now here in Arizona or the beginning part of August. And so there's no break for them whatsoever. And again, it tells you their commitment, the level of commitment, their level of wanting to learn more as well.
And three things. One is the sustainability, the ability for teachers to stay after they've been in the program. After they've been in the program and they go back to teaching, do you find there's a level of satisfaction that, you know, we hear all these things about teachers are anxious to leave the teaching world. And do you find this program changes that?
You know, that's I'm so glad you brought that up. I know why you do what you do here, Robin. You're a professional as well.
You're very sweet.
You're asking
sweet.
Some really good questions I have not talked about. So, you know, that's a great point. So I was talking to several principals where our teachers are working. And in this one case, I won't name the teacher, but she said, oh my God, she came back, Javier, with all this energy. There was just something different about her this year. And it was already, we were talking about, and somewhere in February when teachers start kind of, you know, the Christmas vacation's long gone, there are no vacations or holidays coming up. And she's like, gosh, she's just taking it to another level. So they come back refreshed, right?
Mm-hmm.
With new ideas. But also, one of the things that we've seen based on the surveys that we've gone, many of our teachers go into leadership roles. And so I love that we're doing that. So we're talking about not just preparing them to go back in the classroom.
When you say leadership roles, what do you mean in the world of education?
So many of them are going into like leadership administration roles.
Mm-hmm.
Some take leadership roles as team leaders in their math departments or science departments. And so we see a lot of that. It's really kind of impressive. But going back to what you're saying, in the terms of becoming refreshed, they really do. And that's, I think, a really great piece of it. I think they learned what they were on, and they were just kind of excited and bring that energy back in into the school year.
So in your background, you were a recruiter at one point, and now you are still recruiting for businesses to be involved in this program and for teachers. So how can businesses participate?
You know, that's a great question again. I would encourage businesses to contact me or go to our website, and they'll be, yeah, actually, I'll just give them my cell number now, 520-221-5625. Anybody interested in talking to me about exploring? And then for teachers, middle school and high school teachers, and let me tell you, we've had some elementary teachers participate who have like really strong content area.
Mm-hmm.
But we have about 25 positions across the state, some here locally in Tucson at Raytheon, at Tucson Electric Power, and possibly Freeport-McMoRan and TMC. Roche, no, they're full this year. But we do have slots across the state and, of course, in Tucson. So any teacher interested in exploring, feel free to contact me or our program coordinator, Andrea Lauritsen. And again, all that information is on teachersandindustry.arizona.edu. You get all that information there.
So say that again,
teachersandindustry.arizona.edu. And
you'll see Javier and his phone number and his contact information.
And our awesome video that we worked with.
Oh, the videos are great.
Did you see? Okay.
Yes.
So we worked with Tucson Values teachers,
mm-hmm.
Katie Rogerson, who really kind of, I would say, was really instrumental in this piece. we had a grant from the Verizon to allow us to hire professionals to put this piece together for us. And it's, I think it's really cool. I think it should be nominated for an Academy Award, my personal opinion.
Aim high.
I don't know if I'm biased or something, but... But anyway, so check our Academy Award winning nominated video. It's pretty cool. And, you know, again, it's about, you know, one of the things that we want to do in our program, it's going to be teacher-centered. Our program is teacher-centered. We want to have fun. We want to, like, learn. You know, reach out to us. This is a new era for
teachers. Yes, and you need both sides, teachers and business.
And business, yes.
Okay, I want to thank you for coming in. We've been talking to Javier Lopez, who is the director of this amazing program at the university, the Teachers in Industry, and he's given out his way to contact him. And if you are a teacher or doing some sort of scientific or STEM research, you know, you could be a part of this program also. The other thing I want to do is for my co-host, Al. He wanted me to bring up that the College of Social and Behavioral Sciences is presenting courses for the Tucson community with topics such as Brexit, guns in America, food writing, and Mexican superheroes. This is open to the public, and you can register today at communityclassroom.arizona.edu. Goodbye. See you next week.
Thank you.